From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Adeline Baxter with this look at local, regional, and statewide news. State Senator Chris Birch has died. The Anchorage Republican died suddenly yesterday evening after suffering heart complications. He was 68 years old. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
In his work as a lawmaker, Birch spoke about taking the long view in policymaking. In his last speech on the Senate floor last week, Birch talked about Alaska's strengths.
The largest responsibility we have here as a legislative body is to provide some stability in our communities, in our state. There's not a state in the country that wouldn't give their right arm to be in our predicament. $65 billion in the bank, a tremendous cache of human and capable resources, a youthful population.
Birch's son Logan says his father was as positive and outgoing with constituents as he was outside of the public eye.
He was the same person, whether he was speaking in the front of the Senate or if he was sitting with me at the cabin, at the campfire, talking about how to solve all the world's problems. He was the same guy, and he was true to himself.
Logan also says he tries to be more like his father every day.
As I've grown older and had kids of my own and become a father, I've realized that I could not have had a better dad and a better role model and support system from him.
Birch was born and raised in the Fairbanks area. He learned about mining from his father, working on his family's placer mine in the Brooks Range. Birch attended the University of Alaska Fairbanks and became a mining engineer. He put his industry knowledge to work chairing the Senate Resources Committee. He was elected to the House in 2016 and to the Senate last year. He advocated for developing Alaska's resources. He also supported balancing the state budget without drawing down savings. He cited that position in voting to lower permanent fund dividends. Birch also served for 6 years on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. After that, he moved to Anchorage, and he served for 9 years on the Anchorage Assembly. Tributes to Birch poured in on Thursday from lawmakers of both parties, as well as Governor Mike Dunleavy. Anchorage Republican Representative Jennifer Johnston was Birch's friend for nearly 40 years. They first met as young parents in Fairbanks, and their families hiked, skied, and celebrated birthdays together. Birch and Johnston also served in the Anchorage Assembly and the Alaska House together.
Chris just would get out front and center and say just what he felt was the right thing to do. It always came from the heart. He never met a stranger. He never shied from folks that disagreed with him. Instead, he engaged them.
Birch hiked frequently, and his family says he was planning a hike in Girdwood when he died. Birch is survived by his wife, Pam, 2 adult children, and 4 grandchildren. Dunleavy has 30 days to appoint Birch's successor. By custom, the political party in the district with a vacancy nominates 3 candidates for the governor to consider. The appointment is subject to confirmation by the 12 remaining Republican senators. The successor will serve until a special election in November 2020 to fill the 2 years remaining in Birch's term. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Governor Mike Dunleavy is weighing whether to sign a bill he received yesterday that would provide a $1,600 permanent fund dividend this year. If Dunleavy vetoes that amount, Alaskans could receive dividends later than normal. In a statement, Dunleavy said he isn't planning to call the legislature back into a third special session immediately. If he vetoes the PFD funding in the bill, the legislature would need to meet again to ensure PFDs get out this year. Dunleavy has until August 30th to sign the bill or veto all or parts of it. Historically, the State Department of Revenue needed to know the PFD amount by August 31st in order to issue dividends in the first week of October. If Dunleavy vetoes the PFD amount in the bill, he can't call the legislature back into a special session in time for dividends to go out on the normal schedule. That's because state law requires the governor to provide 30 days' notice for a special session. The legislature could call itself into a special session at any time. State law allows dividends to be sent as late as December 31st. A diver died yesterday in Glacier Bay National Park. According to the National Park Service, the diver was working off a permitted research vessel in Torch Bay, which is on the outer coast of the park off the Gulf of Alaska. Earlier today, park spokesperson Ingrid Nixon said no further details were available. The diver's name has not been released while officials attempt to notify next of kin. The U.S. Coast Guard and the Park Service are both investigating the incident together. Southeast Alaska has suffered from a drought and warmer than normal temperatures for about 2 years now. As Angela Denning reports from Petersburg, the month of July broke more records in the region.
Temperatures for most of Southeast were above normal for July. Sitka's July was the warmest on record, averaging 3.5 degrees above normal. Yakutat also broke their hottest July on record at 5.5 degrees above normal. Juneau nearly broke its record. It was 3.8 degrees above normal, making it the second warmest in July.
And the rest of the panhandle itself was generally above normal as well.
That's Brian Besnick, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau.
We're looking at from a couple of degrees to as much as 5 degrees.
For many places around the region, the low temperatures for the month were the highest on record. In other words, it didn't get as cold at night as usual. That was the case for Petersburg, where the average low was a warm 57 degrees.
So while your daytime highs may not have been that extreme, and above normal, your overnight lows were much warmer than expected.
As for rain, the whole region was below normal in July. Petersburg got 2.8 inches of rain, which is about half of what is normal.
Everybody got between about 45 and 80% of the precipitation that they expected. So entire Southeast did not get enough precip really to reach the normal amounts.
So that means that the Southeast drought continues. Actually, the drought status has increased for the northern panhandle to the level of moderate drought, and parts of southern Southeast remain in extreme drought. Overall, Besnick says all of Southeast is short on water.
The thing to remember with the droughts here is that, you know, it's going to take several seasons, and I mean wet seasons, to recover from this. Just having one or two good heavy rainfalls is really not going to alleviate the drought.
Unfortunately, the forecast doesn't look to be solving the problem anytime soon. The National Weather Service predicts temperatures to be above normal and precipitation below normal to normal for the next 3 months.
And that's looking like it might be the trend for the rest of the year.
Okay, not super good news.
No, not really.
The long-term effects of the drought are not known. Currently, some fishermen worry that the lack of water won't be good for salmon reaching their spawning grounds. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
When it comes to the search for the perfect wave, Alaska might not be the first place that a surfer would look. But in recent years, the community of Yakutat has developed a reputation as the premier surf spot in Alaska. Now a group of surfers in the small coastal town is hosting what may be the first surf camp of its kind in Alaska. KHNS's Henry Leisha has the story.
Over the past 4 years, Britta Tonneson has been making regular visits to Yakutat for work. When she visited the first time, she had no idea that the community is known as the surf capital of Alaska.
So now every time I come, I rent a surfboard and a wetsuit and just go paddle around.
That's how she got to know Jack Endicott, owner of the local surf shop Icy Waves.
And then last summer, I told him I was joining this nonprofit called She Jumps, which is an outdoor education nonprofit for women and girls, and that I wanted to, a dream was to get a surf clinic going.
Endicott and Tonneson ran with the idea. Now, She Jumps is offering an instructional clinic for women over the next 3 days in Yakutat. The lessons will be taught by pro surfer Jason Ratboy Collins and his wife Katie Collins, who purchased a house in Yakutat last year.
Jack thinks it's the first clinic of its kind in Alaska, and it happens to be all women. So we have 10 women who signed on.
Endicott says there are about a dozen local surfers in Yakutat. He says the community also draws surfers from around the world who are looking for adventure.
This is a real friendly break. Everybody's, for the most part, are glad that you came. You know, they don't mind having people out there surf with them. So just it's a neat thing. And when the waves are good, they're really good.
Endicott says that Icy Waves has never offered lessons, but he hopes that She Jumps will continue to offer more camps in the future. He has stocked up on beginner boards just in case. Reporting from Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
Bodies believed to be those of the two suspects in murders along the Alaska and Cassiar highways in northern British Columbia last month have been found in Manitoba, Canada. A release from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police says the bodies recovered from dense brush near the Nelson River Wednesday morning are being autopsied for positive ID and to determine the cause of death. 19-year-old Cam McLeod and 18-year-old Briar Shemelsky are suspected in the shooting deaths of 23-year-old Lucas Fowler of Australia and 24-year-old China Deese of North Carolina. Fowler and Deese were tourists found shot to death along the Alcan near Liard Hot Springs July 14th. That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. For more local and state news, go to ktoo.org. I'm Adeline Baxter.